And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where Kawhi Leonard refused to give any of us a calm Father's Day weekend, and now it's Monday, which means we're 72 hours or whatever the math is, I don't care anymore, away from the draft, and there is no one on planet Earth better to talk draft with than Jonathan Givony of ESPN.com, the founder and czar of Draft Express back in the day. How you doing?
I'm doing great. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, and I can see it. It's right there, and Friday morning, this will all be over.
What do you do on Friday? Do you have a tradition for the Friday after the draft? Do you and your wife go out to a nice romantic dinner? Now you have a kid, so there's got to be a babysitter involved. Like, do you have a tradition?
I usually just sleep in. I wake up, and I just try and do as little as possible. And inevitably, your phone is ringing from, like, the moment the draft ends for, like, 24 hours later, and everybody wants to talk about war stories. Like, oh, can you believe this happened? Can you believe that happened? We fooled this team and that. Can you believe they got – these guys did that? Or – and then, you know, all the agents, like, oh, my God, I got lied to. And so it's – that's, like, that's a fun little part. And then my phone just stops ringing for 11 months, and it's great.
Well, what's the – but there's got to be an international competition you're going to in, like, a month or something. There's got to be, like, the under-16 in Lithuania or something that you guys – you're going to go be at.
I'm going to the under 17 world championship in Argentina on July 2nd. And so that'll be like a 2-week trip. And, unfortunately it's not in Buenos Aires. It's in, Santa Fe, which from what I hear is not a great place to have a tournament, but I mean, I'll be there for 5 days. So,
so that's what where you're going to be during free agency. When free agency starts, you're going to be
yes,
watching 16-year-olds. Does under 17 mean 17 and under? I guess it depends when you're. There's probably a month, a birth date month that
exactly
cuts you off, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's okay. Enough of this internet, the international adventures of Jonathan Givony. What's the best you've ever done in a mock draft, by the way? First round only.
Last year, we got the top 11 picks in a row right. And then I think it was Charlotte. I had them projected to take Donovan Mitchell because I had heard that Clifford was on the table in the war room saying, we need to draft Donovan Mitchell. And he was overruled on that. And they took Malik Monk instead. And it's interesting how that played out in hindsight.
Cliff was 100% trying to get them to take Donovan Mitchell. Also, that is only like the seventh worst story about the Charlotte draft room process from the last 5 years. Malik Monk, by the way, I still think Malik Monk is going to be decent in the NBA. The flashes he showed at the end of the season I'm intrigued. I'm interested in Malik Monk year two.
Unfortunately, he's not going to be Donovan Mitchell for them.
No, but they're one of many. I mean, Donovan Mitchell was 13, right?
Sure.
So they're one of 12 that are, what, you know, there are a couple you don't count because they got great players too, but, yeah.
Well, I'll be very happy to get 11 in a row, right, this time.
What about out of 30?
It falls apart really quick, yeah. You know, I mean, because all the trades and all that. I mean, once you get outside the top 10, you know.
It's just madness. Yeah.
And this year, I'm already thinking about, like, the Clippers are at 12 and 13. So I'm saying, who are they going to take 12 or 13? Like, and because there's obviously some trade talk there.
Yes.
Which one are they going to take? Which one are they going to trade? Is it 12 or 13? And so I'm really thinking, probably the better player is not going to go with the first pick with the Clippers. And so it's you know, this is the my thought process 3 days before the draft.
You got a lot of work to do between now and Thursday night, don't you? I'm sure we're putting you through the ringer.
Not really. I mean, no. You know, most of our content is done. I just sent out a thing for the 2019 mock draft, which will run the day after the draft. And so we have like a lot of media stuff. Like I have, doing the other ESPN, NBA podcast later today and then maybe Van Pelt and a couple other things. And so it's mostly like media stuff, radio interviews, and the content is done. You know, like I don't want to watch any more film of Marvin Bagley or Deion. That's over. You know, it's too late for that.
Okay, so everyone around the league who knows me, who works for teams and knows me, knows that I just don't watch enough college basketball, hardly any, to like have any idea if these guys are going to be good. And I'm of the school of thought that I don't even try to cram. Like, I'll watch a little film here and there, but I'm not going to try and pretend like I know who Memphis should take at 4 or 5. This is like, there are people like you. This is your job all year round. I can't fake it. I'm not going to fake it. But I still obviously get a lot of questions from people who work for teams. Like, what are you hearing? What's out there? What rumors? The number one question by leagues, by fathoms, whatever unit of measurement you want to choose, is that, yeah, any idea what in the hell Sacramento is doing at number two? Just any clue at all? I don't remember this much mystery about the team picking number two. Again, I'm not a draftnik, but I just don't ever remember it. So I'll get, you must be getting the same question a lot. I believe you have them mocked as taking Marvin Bagley. And your mock has Michael Porter going 7, I think. Is that right? To Chicago?
Yep.
And there are rumors that, no, they might take Michael Porter Jr. at 2. So already 2 to 7, a very wide range of uncertainty. What in the hell is Sacramento going to do?
That's a tough one, you know. First of all, you have to start off with who even wants to go to Sacramento, you know, because a lot of the top guys in this draft are openly trying to avoid going there. Jaren Jackson, Mo Bamba, Doncic, no medical, you know, for Sacramento. So if they're going to take one of these guys, they're taking him blindly without knowing what is this person's medical status going to be down the road. The one guy who does want to go there is Marvin Bagley. He actually went out there to work out, and they have his medicals. And
does want to go there, or just if they take me, I'm going to be all right?
I think, well, yeah.
He's not like proactively discouraging other teams.
He's the kind of guy that he dreamed of being the number one pick his whole life. And so if he's not going to go number one, then he has to go number two.
Okay.
And so
you do earn more money.
Yeah, you earn more money, and it's a prestige thing. And so, you know, he's been in competition his whole life with DeAndre Ayton, his former teammate. And so DeAndre's going to go 1. Bagley's going to go 2. And that's, you know, we were the first ones to put Bagley at 2, and Kings fans were up in arms. They said, oh, my God, there's no way that Vlade passes on Luka. And you can't see it happening. And, yeah, I mean, that's the way it's looking right now. But, I mean, a lot of things can happen. I mean, maybe they trade it for Kawhi. I mean, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen there at 2.
I can't imagine them trading number 2 for Kawhi Leonard. First of all, to my knowledge, as we're recording this at 2:19 Eastern Time on whatever day this is, Monday, no team has even gotten close to getting permission to talk to Kawhi's agent. And any team who's not in Los Angeles, and even those teams, should want to do that before they throw anything like the number 2 pick to San Antonio.
Do you have to ask for permission to talk to his uncle also, or how does that work?
I don't even know. I don't. I think his uncle is – I'd have to review his uncle's status, at whether he's a registered agent or an agent adjacent, or maybe you don't. You probably don't.
That's probably the guy you need to talk to, right?
Oh, boy, that is a whole mess. That thing is – that situation is just a mess. Okay, so Sacramento – So you got him taking Bagley.
That's
tell
a
me,
safe
tell
pick.
Me why Marvin Bagley is good. Like, because
he's
Marvin
good because he's probably going to be a 20-10 guy. He's going to put up stats, and so stats are good, I think.
That's the thinking?
I mean,
because
yeah,
he's a big guy who can't shoot, and there are questions about his defense. Is that correct?
He can shoot a little bit, you know. I mean,
a little bit.
He made more threes than most shooting bigs in the NBA made in college. It's not a pretty
That's
thing.
Encouraging.
Yeah. Well, because we're in a new era also, yeah, where every big shoots threes, you know. Channing Frye didn't shoot threes in college, so I mean, it's a new era we're living in right now, but he's one of the best rim runners. NBA GM told me he's the best rim runner I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen a guy run the floor better than that. And
I like that.
He's got a very quick second bounce. He's a great rebounder. He's plays with a big time motor. He's a phenomenal athlete, and he finishes everything with a dunk. And, you know, he's got some potential to, you know, be a creator also, facing the basket. He's got a great first step. And the hope is that he can figure out how to play defense, because that's something he does not do right now. He doesn't even show any instincts.
See, right there, that gets me a little worried.
Yeah.
Big man that inspires the sentence, the worry is that he doesn't know how to play defense, is a little scary.
Agreed. I mean, look at, if you pull up my top 100, you'll see where I have Bagley. It's not at number 2. And so I think you got to go with Doncic there. You have to really look at Jaren Jackson, and Mo Bamba to me is the most interesting prospect in this draft. So those guys to me, along with Ayton, are better prospects than Bagley. But Bagley's an old school guy, and there's still a lot of old school people in the NBA who, you know, like, they love that kind of big man.
Well, Pelton wrote about this last week, and I wanted to ask you about it because I do think it's a fascinating question. You know, we see he highlighted two trends. Number one, small ball seems to be persisting now in the playoffs as a real thing. Centers getting played off the court, you know, and it's easy to cast like the Warriors and the Rockets as anomalous teams, and to some degree they are. But even like, even the Celtics, when they put Horford at the five, now Joel Embiid stayed on the floor because he's Joel Embiid, but they had to hide him on Marcus Morris. Like, it became very hard for him to defend pick and roll, spread pick and roll with a 3-point shooting center. And I know teams like the Celtics, I know the Celtics particularly, when Gobert is on the floor and they play Utah, they're like, oh, let's put Horford at the five and play him right off the floor. Like, we're not afraid of him. And then that and just the level of production you get from a Dwayne Dedman or like some guy that you sign for a 1-year contract or a minimum is like trends coalescing to make people ask the question, like, should you really use a top five pick on a center? All year we write about how the league is about wings. You can't have as many wings. And then we get to the draft and it's like all these centers. Now these guys are good, but in your experience talking to scouts whose their job for years and years is to follow these guys and track these trends, like, how are they grappling with that question?
I don't think that the NBA has really evolved that way yet in terms of the way that they draft. You look at last year's draft, from 12 to 30, there were something like 16 centers drafted, you know? And so I don't, you know, the NBA continues to draft big men year after year, and so I think it's the coaching staffs who have to deal with that now more. That's what's confusing to me about, you know, why Doncic, you know, probably isn't going to go in the top three, but because I just think there's so much value in a 6'8" point guard who can play pick and roll and make shots off the dribble and such a high basketball IQ. But what do I know?
Well, that's all year has been Luka Doncic. All year. That's all we've heard. Luka, like DeAndre Ayton, whatever we've heard a little bit. Like, Luka Doncic has been, now to some degree, this is like the allure of any international player. Like, you just become like 25% more alluring if you're playing abroad. Also, he's the MVP of the second best league in the world at age 18, 19, whatever he is now. All of this noise and all of this accomplishment, he's really going to go fourth? Is that actually what's going to happen? That's insane.
That's how it looks right now. Unless somebody trades up, you know? I mean, unless one of these really good playoff teams decide. Because I think it's the teams in the playoff, the good teams love him. The bad teams hate him. That's what I'm getting
hate?
So far.
Hate?
A lot of teams tell me we have him sixth, seventh, even eighth on their board.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think there's a backlash, honestly, against him, where it's like, you're told a guy is so good, you know, every single day that people start to say, no, he's not. You know, and they go watch him like, you know, there's always going to be a level of disappointment when you're told this guy is like, built up like this kind of LeBron James type figure. You go watch him, you're like, that's it? Really? So, I don't know.
And you know, like, the Euro wing is an interesting question, right? Like, the guy, the wing, the pure wing who
right.
comes over, who's the star European wing that has ever come to the NBA and been a star? It's fair. I just can't believe that seventh and eighth and he might go fourth.
Yeah. It seems crazy to me too. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing how this plays out. 6 months from now, I have a feeling we're going to be like, what in the heck were these guys smoking? Honestly.
Really?
Yeah,
because think Doncic is going to be that good.
Yeah,
Pelton released his updated draft rankings today, and he's number one, and I believe he's the best prospect since LeBron or so. He's the best since
Anthony Davis.
Since Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've seen him play for the Slovenian national team because I get into those Eurobasket
right.
FIBA tournaments, but I it's not like I've been following him in Madrid.
Sure. I think he still has a lot of upside too. I really feel like he's that good right now, but once you get him in an NBA strength and conditioning program and he's got some baby fat to shed, I think he can get a lot more athletic actually. So That's one of the things you hear people question is they say he's a finished product. He, you know, he was so, such an early bloomer physically. You know, where is the upside for him to continue to improve? Like a Jaren Jackson, for example. I mean, that guy is a blank canvas. And so they feel like what he is now is what he's going to be. But I have a hard time accepting that, honestly. I mean, he just turned 19 years old not too long ago.
Yeah. And you know, look, again, I'm not a Luka Doncic expert. It will be interesting to see how his athleticism looks against NBA athletes versus who he's playing against now. But all of these things are like, athleticism doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? By what people mean with athleticism, speed, jumping ability, that interacts with all your other skills. Like if you're smart, and he's smart, and if you're a good shooter or even a great shooter, like it's almost as if those skills make you like 20% more athletic than you actually are because you think the game faster than everybody else and people have to close out to your shot. Like Klay Thompson's not a great quote unquote athlete, but that guy can get kind of where he wants to go because you got to run him off the line at like it's an automatic basket if he gets an open three. And like, James Harden is not, James Harden has an incredible first step, but if you compare him to someone like Jaylen Brown, like Jaylen Brown's he's not that much more explosive than Jaylen Brown. He's just so smart and crafty that he looks like, and he is, but he looks like he's on a completely different level athletically.
People always wonder about how his game is going to translate, but he's the only one that we've actually seen playing against other NBA players in a competitive environment. I mean, he was amazing against Spain, against Ricky Rubio, who, you know, is a good NBA player. He was very good against Evan Fournier. He was very good against Porzingis. He was really good against Croatia with Bogdanović and Šarić. So, I mean, we don't know. Marvin Bagley hasn't done that. You know, he's been playing against, you know, Boston College and you know, Virginia Tech and all these teams. To me, the EuroLeague is a much higher level than college. And so I can't see how it doesn't translate. I really don't.
It's going to be really fascinating to see if he actually drops to four, not only because of the fact that it will mean three of these other guys have been taken over him, and will there be any remorse over that from those teams, but four is Memphis. And Memphis has been at the center of all of these trade rumors because they're trying to attach Parsons' contract to number four and get whatever back. No one seems to be quite sure what they're trying to get back. And I have to believe, I have no hard intel on this from Memphis. They're being very cagey. I have to believe that, A, that's only the kind of trade that happens on the clock in the draft because they want to see who's there at four. And B, if Doncic is there, they are scrapping those plans of just taking him. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think, you know, considering how much they need to win right now, I mean, their owner just came in and did an interview and said, you know, there's no reason we can't be a 50-win team. You know, that puts pressure on the organization. You can't draft Michael Porter, who people are saying, you know, might need a redshirt year here, and then expect that you're going to win 50 games after that, especially with, you know, with Conley and Gasol. I mean, those guys aren't getting any younger. So in that regard, Doncic makes perfect sense. I keep hearing that it's not a done deal there either for Luka, you know, at four. So, there's some scenarios where he might be there even at five. And I got to think that Dallas is going to jump all over that.
If he's there at five, I'm not a draft guy. Maybe I don't understand something. Listeners, you know I like anything that can save me time, and SeatGeek is here to save all of us time buying tickets. It used to be complicated and confusing ordeal buying tickets to anything, a sporting event, a concert. You would have to check 17 secondary market websites and worry, did I forget to check this one? Am I missing a good last minute deal that might be on that one? All of a sudden, 2 hours have gone by and you're still fretting about whether you've got the best ticket. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices and does all the work for you. It collates the entire secondary market basically into one place, so it's one-stop shopping. It has a very easy-to-use, user-friendly system that has good graphics to let you know if something's a good deal, undermarket deal, a bad deal, where the seat is in a specific section, all of that. It's very easy to use. And it is fully guaranteed, so you can shop at SeatGeek with confidence. It should be your go-to app for finding the best deal to anything. It even helped me find tickets to Hamilton on Broadway. And best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. That can be, you know, a pretty decent chunk of like a baseball game or an NBA game when the season starts up again or a concert. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code LOWE, L-O-W-E, that's my last name, promo code LOWE, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Let's go back to the Memphis thing. I haven't heard a Parsons plus number four scenario that makes any sense to me from Memphis's perspective. Have you?
What about for Kawhi and Pau Gasol? You do Parsons plus McLemore plus four.
That's fine. That's one that makes some sense. And I think that they will be to some degree at least in the loop of what's happening with Kawhi. I think they've had phone conversations.
I haven't heard it. I mean, this is my world. This is much more your world. So I haven't really been spending too much time thinking about trades. I mean, I just keep hearing Kawhi to the Lakers, LeBron to the Lakers, you know, so that's all I'm hearing there, you know.
Parsons and number four. People floated Harrison Barnes and like a future Dallas pick. No. I saw a three-team trade that was making the Twitter rounds on Friday in which Memphis would end up with Kevin Love and Jordan Clarkson, and the fourth and eighth picks would go to Cleveland, I think, and like some other stuff. I don't remember what was going on. Spurs. No. Like, no. The most semi-plausible one has been to the Clippers for Tobias Harris and 12 and 13, and I'm still no. Like, that's the number four pick in the draft, and it could be Luka Doncic. You do, and if it is, maybe this whole discussion is moot. That is such a blue chip asset. You don't salary dump the number four pick in the draft. Now, if you want to move back three spots or get another like slightly lighter shade of blue chip asset that's not quite as good as the number four pick, okay. But like, it's not Harrison Barnes and it's not Kevin Love and it's not even 12 and 13 and Tobias Harris. Like those deals suck. If Memphis does any of those deals, I don't even know what you do. Just give up.
Yeah, I'd have a hard time giving up on Luka if he's there. But if let's say he's gone for whatever reason and you're looking at like Bagley, I mean, then you can get Tobias 12 and 13. Then, I mean, I would think about that. I think you're going to get two pretty good players.
Yeah,
at 12 and 13.
People do seem to think the Clippers will
Tobias is good to me. So
I like to. I'm a Tobias fan.
So you get a lot better. One, you get off a horrible contract. And 12 and 13, you're going to get two really good players
well,
there.
You better. You'd better. You'd better nail one of those picks. Sure. And people do seem optimistic. Like I think you have Colin Sexton mocked at one of the Clippers picks, and I don't remember who else off the top of my head.
Lonnie Walker, but there's a lot of guys that people like there. It's like that whole 12 through 18 range is really wide open right now. You know, Robert Williams, that's who I would take. You know, you got a Clint Capella type five-man, and then you take another wing, and I think you're off to the races. You're looking pretty good.
What are the other big picture themes you're looking at for like, you know, as the lottery begins to unfold, what are the themes you're looking for? Or what sort of, decisions are going to sort of ripple across the whole draft and determine how it looks?
So we talked about where Porter goes and then where Doncic goes. Those are the two big ones. And then the third one to me is how do the guards shake out and where do they end up? I'm talking about Trae Young, Colin Sexton, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Those guys have a narrow range, but they could go in any order. And then Trae Young, obviously, he's such a big name. You know, I mean, he's the player probably that most the casual fan knows the best. You know, he could go anywhere, honestly. He could go three. And then there's some teams in the end of the lottery who really think that there are scenarios that he's there because, you know, if Shea Gilgeous-Alexander goes eight, and then, you know, everybody's saying that Charlotte is probably going to take a point guard. So if they take Sexton and 11, all of a sudden the Clippers could be looking at Trae Young. And is that the kind of guy that they want to add? You know, they keep talking about toughness and competitiveness and character, and, you know, they want soldiers now. And so I don't, you know, that's not Trae Young, but he's a lot of other things. He's really, really good. I mean, he's that guy is ready to, you know, to put up big time numbers right off the bat. So that's a big thing for me. How do those guards shake out? You know, it wouldn't be shocking to me if Gilgeous-Alexander was the first one off the board at eight. And if you think back, you know, 3 months ago, I mean, nobody would have ever predicted that. I mean, Trae Young was such a hot name then. And then you know, if Trae Young starts sliding, will Atlanta go get him? That's the talk right now that, you know, Atlanta likes him, maybe doesn't like him enough to take him at three, but if he starts sliding to 8, 10, 12, you know, they have so many assets, that they can use to go move up, starting with the 19th pick, the 30th pick, the 34th pick. I believe that they own, someone's pick for next year also. And so,
well, they've got a good Cleveland pick too.
Right. Exactly. Cleveland's pick. And that's a top 10 protected pick.
It's actually not that. It's kind of, well, a lot of it, how good it is will depend on some things that happen in Cleveland this summer. It may not be that good. It may just be end up being a second round pick.
I mean, I could see, even if LeBron leaves, I could see Cleveland being 11, 12. I mean, who knows, you know? I mean, so.
Yeah, it depends. And they'd still have Love. I mean, I think if LeBron leaves, they need to just pull the plug, get what they can for Love, and make sure you don't trade that 2019 pick, which is top 10 protected in 19 and 20, and then converts to.
That's why if you're Atlanta, maybe you do try and cash in on that pick now, because it's top 10 protected next year, top 10 protected in 2020, and then it converts to a second rounder, or two second rounders. So, maybe you do say, hey, let's take that plus the 19. Where does that get us in this draft? Does it get us to where Trae Young is going to be? Because this is a deep draft, and there's a lot of question marks about next year. I just sent in my 2019 mock draft. I know that's the last thing you want to talk about right now is the 2019 mock.
You could make up a name.
Right.
You could be like, you could just make up any name. It'd be like,
do you know who Zion Williamson is? Have you heard about him?
I've heard that name.
Yeah, so that's one name you've heard of. It's not a very good draft, it's looking like.
You could have made up like a Game of Thrones character.
Right.
You'd be like, yeah, I've heard he's got a good jump shot. I've heard that. I've heard, Littlefinger has a pretty good, Jimmy Littlefinger has a pretty good jump shot. Would have to say, yeah, sure. Sounds good.
Right.
How's he been in the under 17s? I don't know.
Right.
That's interesting though, that Atlanta would watch the draft unfold. And that if on the clock at some point, you know, they've got teed up some chance to, you know, trade all these picks to get a shot at Trae Young. That's interesting.
There's some conversations I hear about them flipping with the Clippers to getting one of those picks at 12. People say they really like Lonnie Walker. You know, is he going to be there at 19? Probably not. So do they trade up to 12 to go get him? And so I think there's going to be a lot of movement. And I mean, that's the most fun part about the draft is, all these contracts being exchanged, all these picks being moved. I don't know if Woj is not going to be like seven picks ahead this year, so we'll have to find something else to, you know, to occupy us.
I'm excited for that possibility because I don't know if I'm excited for it or not because now I'm used to it. I miss the suspense. But I also like being ahead, and I do think it's silly that we have to pretend that these trades haven't been agreed to yet when we know they've been agreed to. And then, you know, Adam walks up to the podium and is like, with the 15th pick, no, they traded this already. This trade's already happened.
Yeah. We're wearing the wrong hat.
Yeah.
And they're wearing the wrong hat.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Why are we doing this to these poor kids? And asking them questions like,
right.
So how do you think you're going to fit in with Chicago? Like, everyone knows, you know, whoever has traded this pick. But that's interesting. Atlanta and Trae Young. Yeah. You know, someone floated to me today, well, I wonder if Atlanta will get in on Kawhi. You know, they can offer number three and Torian Prince and John Collins. I'm like, why are they doing that?
No chance.
And
they want to be bad. And they're already thinking about.
Yeah, Travis Schlenk is their GM. And the book on him, which I think is accurate, is like he wants to build this team.
Right.
Like this is a chance to build. They are already on the path to being bad when he got there. And now he gets to build his team. And I don't think he's going to flip all of the best building blocks for Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
Even if Kawhi Leonard says, yeah, I'll stick around, you know.
I've heard that some teams have approached the Hawks about taking, you know, Schroeder off them, taking Bazemore in exchange for, you know, the Hawks moving down, and they've said no, you know, like we're not going to sacrifice anything from our future. The cap room doesn't do a whole lot for us. So, you know, you would think that having that flexibility of being that cap room team and, you know, all the moves that the Lakers are going to have to make here. But no, it doesn't look like it.
Yeah, I think they would sacrifice some to, like, neither of those guys to me is in their long term plans.
Right. But they won't move off three is what
right,
I mean.
Right. But three is, I mean, we're sitting there talking about the players they
Schroeder
can get.
Yeah, those guys aren't in the long term plans. Yeah. They're not going to pay a premium to get off of those.
Yeah, they're
those
not going to move from three to eight to get off of those contracts.
Right.
Even that is because three is so valuable. Hawks was, you mentioned, have you ever heard of the Bulls? The Bulls and the Magic at 6-7, I feel like I have not heard much about. Someone told me today there's a rumor the Bulls are trying to move up from 7. Have you heard anything about that? Either of those teams, but particularly the Bulls.
I have not heard that, no. I mean, you hear something about everybody by now, and it's just like I haven't heard anything credible that I actually believe on them. But a lot of the best trades that happen on draft night are the ones that we never hear about in advance. So, you know, just because I haven't heard about it or you haven't heard, I mean, that probably means that that's actually out there, you know?
You have Orlando taking Wendell Carter and the Bulls.
That's going to be an interesting one because there's, you know, there's a real split in the league about, you know, what they think the Magic are going to do. Some people think they have to take a guard. They're going to be taking, picking between Trae Young, Colin Sexton, and maybe Gilgeous Alexander. And some people feel they're just going to take the best player available. Maybe it's Michael Porter, you know, maybe it's Wendell Carter. And so, you know, the way that the Magic kept their coaching search close to the vest, I think that their draft situation is very similar.
Does it matter? This is always fascinating to me. Should it and does it matter that if they take Carter, they have Carter, Gordon, and Isaac all as like young-ish players? Now, Gordon's obviously going to be a free agent, so they have a decision to make. Should we care about that? Or are they just still in a situation?
Not really, because I don't know if Gordon or Isaac can really play the five, you know, for really long stretches. And so, you know, Vucevic has one more year on his deal, and then he probably opts out.
Yeah, he's not going to be on the team after.
And then Biombo is, that guy's dead weight at this point. You're not making decisions based off his contract.
No.
And so you probably do need a center of the future there, and, you know, we'll see what happens with Gordon. You know, like, if somebody throws, like, a max offer at him, like, are they going to match it? I don't know. You know, I'm just speculating here. I have no clue.
Do the Knicks take Trae Young if he falls there? I mean, that's what you were saying. He could fall, you know, conceivably even further than that. He's obviously been a hot name.
I've heard no. I've heard that he had a poor workout there. And, you know, he's not exactly Fizdale's type of player. You know, I mean, that they're looking for toughness. They're looking for defense, you know, and Trae Young's a lot of things. He's not that. And so I've heard they're more likely to take Colin Sexton there at 9 than they are Trae Young. But the hot names that you hear now this week of the draft is Michael Porter and Kevin Knox, and I have them taking Knox right now.
Kevin Knox, based on the little I've read of him in the last 2 weeks, or last week really, since the finals ended, and the little I've watched and how young he is very, very interesting to me. Can you continue to sell me on Kevin Knox? Because I'm interested.
Well, I think he's the third youngest player in the draft. He's 6'9", 7-foot wingspan, 9-foot standing reach. He has the dimensions to even moonlight at the five at times. And then you look at the situation he was in. He was playing out of position, a small forward. Some of that was his own choosing. He, you know, went to a place that would play him at the three. And a lot of these guys in high school, I don't know how much they watch of today's NBA. They always want to be downsized. They like the twos want to be ones, the threes want to be twos, the fours want to be threes, and the fives want to be fours. Whereas in the NBA, it's the exact opposite trend. And so, you know, he can shoot the ball. He's a multi-positional defender. He's a very good athlete. He's young. He's a high character guy. He's very well spoken. And, you know, I watched him work out in Chicago, and I'm like, right away, I was like, this guy's going way higher than we had. We had him at like 14 at the time. I'm like, there's no way he's going 14. Just you, sometimes you watch a guy work out and you're like, he's oozing with talent and there's so much potential there. And you're like, for sure, this guy's going higher. You know, I felt that way when I went to watch Paul George work out, or, you know, I'm trying to think of like other great workouts that I've seen. You know, it doesn't always translate. Obviously the one on zero stuff has its limitations, but some guys, you just watch them and you're like, this guy's so freaking talented. There's no way he's going to get into a team setting and show this kind of talent, and somebody's going to fall in love with him. And now you're hearing, you know, that he's in that 7-11 range, most likely.
I'm intrigued. You didn't unsell me. You sold me further.
Just don't go watch too much Synergy on him. You know, that might,
it will sell me the other way.
Yeah.
It wasn't that good.
He didn't have a great year. You know,
there was one guy you wrote, we're going to talk about this comment. You and Mike Schmitz wrote a piece on your steals of the potential steals of the draft. And one of the snippets on one of them, I don't remember who.
Probably Hamidou Diallo.
Yeah. Included the line that he was borderline unplayable late in the season. I was like, that seems bad.
He just happened to play for the same team as Kevin Knox.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's just like they built a team where they're like, let's put as little shooting, as little ball handling, as little passing, as little basketball IQ as possible. Let's just play two centers on top of each other, the whole, and let's just, you know, maybe it'll work itself out. And it worked as well as you think it would have worked until Shai Gilgeous-Alexander just kind of like emerged out of nowhere. He was like the sixth best prospect on their team. And then he became the point guard and he really helped them, you know, down the stretch, and they ended up having a decent year, but it was not a very well constructed team. And to their credit, Kentucky has done a great job this year of getting a lot more shooting, a lot more ball handling, a lot more playmaking. So they've joined, you know, the modern era here. And they're going to be a lot more entertaining to watch next year.
Listeners, have you ever wondered if you are brushing your teeth correctly? Maybe you haven't, but maybe you should. And Quip, the new electric toothbrush that is a fraction of the cost of most electric toothbrushes, is here to solve all those problems for you. It comes at the fraction of a cost of bulkier brushes like the one Elaine Bennis has to carry on the subway, and it ruins her whole day. And it has little vibrations that help clean your teeth the right way. It has a built-in timer that makes sure you do the dentist recommended 2 minutes, and a little pulse that reminds you to switch sides so you don't overdo it on one side and underdo it on the other side. It has a subscription plan. They deliver new brush heads on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. It has a mount. It comes with a little mount that suction cups right to your mirror and unsticks really easily. You can travel with it. You can store it easily. It's been on Oprah's O list. It was named one of Time's best inventions. It's the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association, which seems important. It is backed by a network of over 20,000. That's a lot. Dentists and hygienists. I didn't even know there were that many dentists, and hundreds of thousands of users. And this is the amazing part. Quip. Q-U-I-P. Quip starts at just $25. You think an electric toothbrush would cost like $200. $25 if you go to getquip.com/low. That's my last name, L-O-W-E, right now. You get your first refill pack free with the Quip electronic toothbrush that is just $25. Again, you get your first refill pack free at getquip.com/low. That's getquip.com/low.
Tell people about a couple of these guys, like who through the frame of this, like who can the Warriors hope to get at 28, who can maybe help them, who can maybe play minutes for them in the playoffs, not 20 minutes, but can play Jordan Bell minutes. You're not Jordan Bell's minutes, but like 10 to 12 minutes a game by the end of the year, he might be in the playoff rotation.
The strength of this draft to me is at the guard wing spot. It's not point guards. It's guys who are secondary ball handlers, you know, like the Dante DiVincenzos, the Grayson Allens, you know, the Josh Okogies, those guys who, you know, can play alongside a star, who can make a shot, who can, you know, make good decisions with the ball, who can guard. And that's where, you know, you're going to see this run from like 20 to 40. I can see like 15, you know, guys in that mold being drafted there. Whereas in the past, it used to be just big men. There are no big men in this draft outside of the top 15. There are five in the top 15. And after that, it's like the next one might go 45. So, that'll be an interesting theme to track, is just like how many guys over 6'9" get drafted, you know, from after Robert Williams.
How's next year's draft looking for in that same vein?
It looks there's very few big men right now.
Interesting. Yeah. So maybe what Kevin's piece is really about is just should you use a top five pick, because maybe the rest of these guys are good.
Games. That's the one thing, yeah. That my argument is like Jaren Jackson is good, Wendell Carter is good, Mo Bamba is good, Marvin Bagley is good, DeAndre Ayton is good, Robert Williams. I mean, these guys are legit dudes. I didn't understand last year, like, I don't know, Caleb Swanigan, you know, like going in the, I didn't get that, you know, to me, like, you can find that dude in free agency, maybe for the minimum. So like, why are you going to use the first round pick on him? Not to pick on Portland, but there were a lot of guys drafted in the 20s last year. We were like, why not just take a flyer on Sterling Brown or some wing, you know?
You have the Warriors taking Grayson Allen right now. I'm not sure the world is ready for that.
I'm ready.
I know
him and Draymond.
Well, boy.
The thing about, I think Grayson's a little bit misunderstood. Like, he doesn't want that attention, really. I mean, he messed up and with the tripping stuff, but like, he's a very like quiet, humble guy.
How many times did he trip people?
I think it was like three times. It was like two and a half times.
It was enough times It was a Draymond kneeing people in the groin, kicking people in the groin amount of times. Like, it was that many times.
I don't think he would did it on purpose. I really think that he's such a competitive dude. Like, he's trying to get any advantage he can on his opponent. And he's like, if I trip this guy, you know, in a subconsciously, then my team will, you know, marginally benefit, you know, not thinking what the reaction would be, especially the second or third thing. You could see right away after it happened, he was crying on the bench because, like, he was like, what in the hell did I just do? You know, like, so I don't know, just spending some time around him. He's a great guy and I think he's perfectly normal. And so I think in like 6 months from now, we're going to totally forget about all that stuff.
Do you think there's a way physically that he could trip somebody and have them fall so that they fall like their groin falls into Draymond Green's foot, like all in one?
They might work on that. You know, that might be something they work on in practice.
The Warriors can't be more disliked. They just can't make themselves more disliked. And I'm saying by fans of the other 29 teams who are now sick of the Warriors, right? And the Warriors of Rudy.
I like
NBA.
Watching the Warriors.
No, I'm saying the Warriors. I like being around the Warriors. I like their coaches. I like their players. I like watching them play. Yeah. On the other hand, I do sympathize with.
Yeah.
If I were a diehard fan of another team, I would be like, well, this is now kind of boring for me,
right?
Even though, as I've said multiple times, they were a game away from being eliminated in the playoffs. So they're going to get you think they're going to get a guy who's going to be decent for them. They could get this could be a legit win now because Bob Myers has talked about this. Like, they're the rare team, you know. Usually tell people just the best player available. You know, even in the 20s when it's like, you know, what are the chances these guys are going to contribute at all, let alone next year? Just take whoever you like the best. They're one of the teams that's like, no, we're actually going to try to draft somebody who fits our team next year, who fits a good NBA team next year. You think they can actually get that?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they need a guard. They need some shooting. You know, I mean, they played Quinn Cook like so many minutes towards the end of the year. It seems like they could use another guy on their roster that they can throw out there, you know. So, you know, if Iguodala's banged up, Livingston, I mean, like, no, those guys aren't going to be there forever. So just having a cheap you know, rookie scale contract for 4 years, someone who's ready to come in and produce and just make shots and play the right way and be well liked. I mean, that seems like it's logical.
What else is interesting to you? What else is, we talk about sort of the way the draft is going to unfold? Like, what other pivot points do you have your eyes on, or what guy that you think might fall, or just what's sort of in your head is a flashpoint you're looking for?
I mean, I'm a Euro guy. I travel so much. You know, I'm always like on planes heading to this tournament, that tournament, you know, like, it's a little bit disappointing to see how weak of a crop it is internationally, and it's not really getting any better. I mean, in my next year's mock in 2019, I have two guys projecting in the first round. So there's been a lot of conversation, you know, and my travel is like, what is going on here? You know, like, why aren't more guys emerging out of Europe? And is that something that the NBA needs to be concerned about? And I think that might be, you know, it's not the reason why they started the NBA Academy Ventures, but I think the NBA is really focused on the fact that they can't miss on guys. You know, like, if Yao Ming was coming up today, they want to make sure we're getting that guy early, we're giving him the training, we're giving him the facilities, we're giving him the medical care to reach his full potential. And so it'll be really, I mean, I've been following that story really closely, the NBA academies, and I've, you know, been out there, watched everything that they've been doing. And so it's not a this year, it's not a next year, it's probably more like 5 years from now, but that'll be interesting to follow.
Who's the best international team in Europe in 5 years? Like, who's the team that has the pipeline of actual players that are like 16 right now?
I mean, Real Madrid is doing an amazing job.
No, the national team. Sorry. Like Spain, France.
France is loaded. I mean, we were just at the NBA Global Camp and they built a roster of 12 of the most promising young players in Europe. And the best three guys were all from France. And like NBA guys that were sitting next to me, they're like, those dudes are lottery picks all day, you know? And so it'll be interesting to watch them this summer. They're playing in Argentina at the under 17 world championship against our guys. We have a great generation at that under 17, age group. And so that'll be like a really fun clash to see, you know, how the French team goes up against the Americans. I mean, the French are their best equipped to play in the NBA physically, and they have the most athletic league. And, you know, it's always been a question of, you know, their development process. And so some guys have come over to college now, you know, from France. So, but they're getting better with that. Elio Kobo, French guard, will probably be a first round pick this year. So it's just France is going to keep, you know, pumping out NBA players.
Spain hasn't really found like a follow up generation, have they?
Not really.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. And I don't really see like a top guy coming up anytime soon. What's interesting is that they're spending so many resources. The teams now, they have a rule where if you bring a guy in and he plays 3 years in Spain before he turns 18, he counts as Spanish. And so all the local teams are, they're bringing guys from all over the world, and they're loading up their junior teams with guys from Serbia, from Montenegro, even from China, from France, from England, from everywhere. And there's some concern that it's really hurting the local Spanish guys, that they're not getting the opportunities, you know, to develop. I mean, Luka Doncic is a great example. I mean, he may as well be Spanish. I mean, the dude, I mean, he's been there since he was 13 years old. I'm not sure if he would be the same player if he had grown up somewhere else.
Sports fans, did you know you can stream this podcast on Spotify right now? It's easy. All you have to do is open the app on your mobile device or desktop, click on the browse channel, and then click on the podcast section. You can also stream on your smart speaker. Now it's that much easier for you to stay up to date on all the latest and greatest things in sports thanks to Spotify. You know this even better than I do. It's at least 3 or 4 months now that this buzz has been permeating the world that Vlade Divac does not like Luka Doncic as a prospect, which runs counter, like, the joke for 3 years has been you just attach an IC onto anybody's last name, Vlade is going to draft him or trade for him.
Right.
And so this is, again, like 3 to 4 months ago, and the buzz has been so loud and so universal that it's almost strange. And it's either true, and Vlade's been telling everyone in the world that he does not like this guy for whatever reasons, does not like him as a prospect to take number two anyway, or it's like the greatest con job in NBA history, and he's actually been lying, and he's actually fooled everybody, and he's actually going to take Doncic at number two. But we're all believing it, right? Like, you believe it. You've heard the same.
Yeah, I just don't think that they were anticipating moving up from 7 to 2 in the lottery. They were thinking, I mean, I don't know what the odds were for that, of that happening, but all year, you know, it's not just Vlade, but also his staff, you know, was very openly criticizing Luka, saying, oh, he's not athletic enough, he's too emotional, he's not this, he's not that.
If they take him.
Oh, I mean, it'd be amazing, yeah.
The best thing would be, like Adam Silver says, with the number one pick, the Phoenix Suns take DeAndre Ayton, and then like 45 seconds later, he's already coming back out, and it's like the Sacramento Kings take Luka Doncic. It would be the greatest troll job ever, because they have fooled everyone. And no one thinks, they're like, oh, Vlade really doesn't like him. Like, Vlade knows some stuff, I don't know what it is.
Sure. Yeah.
Not going to happen?
I would be surprised if they took Luka.
Oh, man, it would be the best.
I don't even know, you know, if, you know, some of it might be, like we talked about, who wants to go to Sacramento? You know, the fact that Marvin Bagley went to a workout, you know, wore the Kings jersey, you know, and did that whole thing, I think that really put him in position to be number two, because I don't know if they're feeling that same love.
Is he going back to Europe if the Kings pick him at number two? He's not. It's not like these guys are going to not show up. They're going to show up. They're going to get their money. Then the Kings are going to have the exclusive rights to extend them early and give them the max if they're good. Like, this is like what the Nets did with Kobe Bryant. They got freaked out.
It's not the kind of embarrassment that they want right now. You know, they're really trying to show people that it's a new Kings. You know, it's that they've changed. It's not the same mistakes that they made, you know, 2-3 years ago. It's a thing of the past. And so that potential embarrassment, I think, of him coming out and saying, trade me, I'm not coming to training camp, that's enough maybe to scare them into thinking that they shouldn't take him.
Has he there's no indication he's going to do that, though, right?
I mean, I don't. He won't. He obviously
he just
hasn't
came
said
out
anything.
Today and said, "I'm excited to come to the NBA and making the jump."
Right.
So he's going to turn down.
As you know, it's not really the players that you know that are in charge of that stuff. You know, I mean, it's their agents, and they're the ones that are in charge of trying to maneuver and get their guy in the best spot possible. And what does Luka Doncic really know? But what's the difference between, you know, Atlanta and Sacramento? I mean, it's all the same for him.
See, to me, if the Kings want to turn the page and prove that they're a different organization, they just pick who they want to pick, and they don't care
right.
about this noise.
Yeah,
they don't let it get to them. And they say, you know what? Let us show you we're a different organization. You might be skeptical. We're going to actually prove it to you. That's just me. How surprised – we'll let you go in a few minutes because you have 9,000 other things to do. When the Suns hired Igor Kokoschkov to be their coach, who coaches the Slovenia national team, former Jazz assistant, Suns assistant, Pistons assistant, Clippers, I think, too.
and I believe is undefeated as the head coach of the Slovenian national team, which is pretty badass. Did you assume for like a minute that that meant they were taking Doncic at number one? Are you surprised that there's been no, like literally no Doncic at number one momentum?
I didn't think it meant that they were taking him, no, because, you know, as you know, Zach, like NBA head coaches aren't the ones, other than Pop and Tibbs, you know, that's a thing of the past, you know?
No, I know, but just the idea that these guys have a special connection already and right. What could that mean for your franchise if your star and your coach are simpatico like yeah. That, you know?
I mean, I think the connection to that's is more important is the one between Sarver and Arizona, Sarver and Ayton, you know, and that's the one that I think makes the most sense.
That's something. Multiple people told me Ayton could have put up 20 and 10 next year, which I don't care if you're on a bad NBA team. 20 and 10 is legit. So I'm fine if they want to take Ayton number one, I guess. It's not exciting. It doesn't excite me.
I mean, you know, I would have enjoyed watching Devin Booker and Doncic in the same backcourt, you know, but I mean, they obviously need a center, and DeAndre Ayton is a monster. So he's going to be good.
Yeah, they do need a center. They do need a center. Alex Len is a backup. He hasn't worked out. He was a little bit better last year in some facets of the game, but didn't work out. Chris kind of plays like a center offensively, like a dive guy that they've tried to turn into a perimeter guy right. With some playmaking skills. I don't know that he's going to make it either way. He might make it one way or another. And Bender is a perimeter player, so I guess they need a center. So there's no suspense at number one, I guess. Let me bring up the draft order and see if there's a team I didn't ask about that I wanted to ask about. Denver's trying to get off money. Charlotte, we already talked about.
I don't buy that whole Denver stuff.
Really?
I'm not buying that they're going to trade Fareed and package Fareed in the 14.
14's a good pick.
There's no chance. They're not doing that.
And Tim Connelly loves the draft.
Yeah.
He lives for the draft.
He's great at it. Look at
that. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. You know.
He's one of the best, I mean, talent evaluators in the NBA. There's no chance that they're going to. And he has one more year in his contract. What's so bad about holding on to a $10 million contract for another year? Maybe they move down, you know, I could see that a little bit, but there's no way they move out.
I also think Fareed, I understand that the NBA has evolved away from players like Fareed. Like and offensively,
right, he's not a bad player either. He's like, he could help somebody.
There is a place in the NBA universe for Kenneth Fareed. Come off the bench, be essentially my backup five, or maybe I've got a shooting five, so you can be the second biggest guy on the court, whatever. And just come in and wreak havoc for 15 minutes. And right. And by the way, that means you have to try hard on defense every second, every yeah. possession, which he's been inconsistent at. But just like crash the boards, run the floor, do stuff, do your thing.
He's
like,
better than Trevor Booker. He's better than Quincy Aces. He can give you 10 to 15 minutes for sure,
easily.
And it's not a horrible contract. If you had to rank the contracts in the NBA on it, he wouldn't even be in the top 100 worst contracts.
No, and look, they got good minutes from Trey Lyles last year. The numbers when they played Jokic and Plumlee together were better than they had any right to be. So it's not, and they played Chandler at the four here and there and all that. So I get that there weren't like huge amounts of minutes waiting to be sopped up by Fareed, but there were some. Like you got to figure out a way to get that guy on the floor. Nets, that's the other Nets and Sixers. Let's end there. Those are the teams we haven't talked about. Sixers have 10 and 26, and obviously there's been some stuff that's happened in Philadelphia in the last month or so.
I've heard, yeah.
And Brooklyn at 29 via Toronto. There was some news about them. There was some noise about them trying to move up. I don't quite see how that's super feasible for them. But take either one of those teams. Philly is of particular interest because they have two picks, because they're a win-now team that gets to pick 10th, which is rare. Any interesting buzz with either of them?
Well, who's making that pick, first of all, at 10? Is it Brett Brown?
I think
is
Franklin, the blue dog, is making the pick.
So who does he like?
Franklin.
Is he a Villanova fan?
Is there any player that has like a last name that is like a pun of a dog breed or something? Because maybe that could be the inside track.
Everybody just assumes that they're taking Mikal Bridges because I doubt – Brett Brown watched a single college game all year, except for Villanova, who, you know, played all their home games in their building. And Brett Brown is, you know, friendly with Jay Wright, and they won the national championship. So he probably is very familiar with him. And it's probably the right pick, too. I mean, this guy is, you know, ready to come in and step in and help a team right now. He's 6'7", 7'2 wingspan. He's like a 43% three-point shooter. He guards, and he can pass, and he's ready, you know. So that's the guy that everybody thinks they're going to pick, but I could also see them trading this pick. Yep. If there's a veteran out there that really helps them right now, I mean, Brett, and they have like six draft picks, and there's no way they don't, they have like one, maybe two roster spots right now for a rookie next year.
I believe they have 4 second round picks in this draft.
Right. And they have 26, 10. So they're going to be,
they're going to be
making a lot of trades, I think. Or they're going to be stashing guys.
That the 10th pick was one that was like immediately pegged as most likely to be traded. You know, right. Everyone's like, oh, they're going to trade that somewhere. Who knows?
It's a good pick, though. So they could get something pretty good for it.
Are you excited?
Oh, I can't wait. I love it. It's like, this is my favorite week of the year. We did all our work. You know, we're ready. And, you know, it's the 1 week people actually care what we think. You know,
that's not true. Yeah. This is a year, you know this, but you've made a career. This is a year-round
it is
gig right now. I mean, these are the most important decisions that teams make. For in the aggregate, how you draft is the most important kind of decision that you make.
You don't think it's overrated?
No.
The draft isn't, you know. I mean, how many of these guys are actually going to make an impact in the NBA next
year? I get that part of it, that, you know, oh, you can look at what's the expected return of the 26th pick. Oh, it's, like, not good.
Right.
But, like, particularly high in the draft, in the lottery, like, those are the decisions that set the course for your franchise. And, like, when you get – even in the 20s, like, you can get role players, rotation guys, and like, it sets the kind of guys that you want on your team. It, if you make a series of good decisions, it literally, you have a team that becomes your team. And if you blow it, then you're scrambling through every other way of changing your team to try and get an identity.
Sure. I think the pro personnel stuff is that's like, the amount of time we spend on the draft compared to trying to figure out which undervalued free agents, which rookie scale guy is expiring, who we can go get and maybe, you know, give him a second life. I mean, that's where there's a lot of value as well. We focus so much hard on the draft. It's amazing.
I think the NBA in the last 5 years has really caught up on that. Not to the degree maybe it should, but as recently as 5 or 6 years ago, teams did not put enough time and effort into like knowing NBA players versus the proportion of time they spent preparing for the draft versus free agency was like wildly out of proportion. And now they've gotten strictly pro personnel guys on every team almost.
Yeah.
So they're starting to catch up. But I agree with you. There's probably still more room to improve in that regard.
I think the pro personnel from Europe, that's going to be interesting to watch, because there were a bunch of dudes who came in this year, like Darius Miller, like Daniel Tice, like Shane Larkin. I mean, there's a bunch of others who made a really nice impact in the NBA and weren't, you know, compensated very, it didn't cost a lot to bring them over.
Right.
And so that's going to be interesting for me to watch, to see how many free agents are brought over this year on two ways. And I mean, there are some very good players out there in Europe still.
Interesting. Well, you got Thursday. What time is the first pick? Like 8 p.m., 7 p.m.?
I should know this. Maybe 7:30.
7:30 p.m.
I'm guessing. I have no clue.
Where are you? Are you going to be on TV the whole night? Are you on our studio somewhere?
I think I'll be doing more .com stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
We got so many setups, I can't even keep track. We got people at Barclays. We got the Jumpers coming here on South Street Seaport.
Nice.
We got a studio show. Everyone's on board. It's going to be fun. All right.
Great.
The mock draft is out. The If We Were Picking mock draft is also out. Read everything these guys do. Jonathan Cavoni, thank you so much for, I know it's a very busy time. Thanks for popping in.
Thanks, Zach. Great to be here.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.